So, without further ado, tonight we have Stephanie Loveless. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you so much.
And I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and we begin always our evenings here with a conversation. So, let's begin our conversation. So, So welcome again, and so just we want to just kind of sketch out what we're going to hear tonight, and try to get a little background and context for tonight. So tonight we're going to have a quadraphonic audio piece, Cricket Tree Crow,
yes,
is the title. Recently published, if I'm not mistaken.
Fairly recently, as a 4.1 DVD.
Right. And that was just released a couple months ago, weeks ago?
In fall. Yeah.
Right, and then also a performance with voice and electronics.
Yes.
Of an even newer collection. What is the title?
The title of the collection is For Lack of Voice.
For Lack of Voice, right.
Yeah, so it's a series, and I'll be performing two voices from the series, two pieces.
Great, and I've really been enjoying listening to that. I mean, both of the pieces, but the new stuff is really interesting and very I don't know how to describe it, but very immersive, very intense, I would say. Tell me about how, you know, so there's some similarities certainly between the two pieces, and both of which involve your voice, which would seem to be, I guess, a kind of your primary instrument, shall we say?
Primary material, yeah.
Have you always been a vocalist, or how did that come, what's your sort of story there, or how did you come to be focusing on the voice?
When I started in media art making videos and films, so that definitely wasn't using my voice at all. And then I started making the soundtracks, and I started making, you know, electroacoustic music, and so none of that used my voice. And then just at some point, I started using my voice as material, and I kind of got hooked or something.
So it just kind of came out of the blue, just one day.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like, oh, I'm going to use my voice.
But not really, you know, like, meh.
Right.
And I sang like everybody sings.
Okay, right. So it was really a kind of an epiphany, maybe, or something that just took over.
Yeah. Well, the
spontaneous
voices move me, and always have, like, you know, in pop music, even it's just like always the voice and the quality of the voice and the characters of the singers that is so important to me, and the intimacy of the voice. And so yeah, it made a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right. So there's your voice is a big part of this, but also the whole soundscape, as it were. I mean, you mentioned electroacoustic. Now, certainly, when I hear your music, that tradition, as it were, certainly comes to mind. I mean, what is your, I guess, you do connect in some way with this electroacoustic style, or a little bit.
Just, I mean, in terms of background, that was my introduction to sound art or doing anything sonically, or even feeling that I could, because I'm not an instrumentalist, and I'm not really a vocalist, so I didn't feel like I could make anything musical until I started doing stuff in computers.
Right. Now you're originally from Montreal, right? So that, I mean, I'm assuming there's some connection. I mean, I know there's a big community.
Huge.
Canada,
and it was generally,
but certainly in Montreal, of electroacoustic computer music.
Yeah, no, it was happenstance in that way, because the film school that I was going to had this electroacoustic music department. So I just started taking classes there, and
Okay, so it's great. Well, it's really a big thread here. So tell me a little bit about how you construct these pieces. I mean, I know a lot of it involves the computer, and a lot of it involves your voice. But I mean, you don't have to tell us everything, but just give us a sense of what is your process. I mean, so many of us are working with technology these days.
Yeah. Well, I think what I do with technology is, I'm convinced it's pretty simple, and so in terms of, there's a lot of different processes, but in terms of a really basic one, and that's in common with all of these pieces, is found sound. So field recordings, or existing songs, and then just spending a lot of time with them and studying them, by often by slowing them down, not always, sometimes doing different analyses, and then listening back to the new sounds that I've made from those sounds, and then trying to reproduce those new sounds with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then using all of that material as a basis for the piece.
Right. So that's gonna be
that's definitely
that describes all the music we're gonna hear today,
yeah,
on some level, in that you started with a found sound or
mm-hmm.
a chosen sound, a sound that you didn't necessarily an appropriated sound.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
And then manipulated it in some way, whether it is,
mm-hmm.
does that slowing down,
mm-hmm.
Looping, I don't know, just different processes on
mm-hmm.
the computer
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
to create a kind of environment.
To create discrete sounds that then I would attempt to reproduce, and then using those recordings to create an environment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a, especially with the cricket tree crow. I mean, having inspired by specific sounds of other creatures,
mm-hmm. yes.
That you're mimicking in that, and I guess in a certain sense, you're doing that in the other works as well. Although
mm-hmm.
you're using the other body of work is using recordings
mm-hmm.
of great singers,
mm-hmm. yes. Yes,
such as Paul Robeson.
Yes. Yes.
And Marlena Dietrich.
Who might not be a great singer, but she's
a
great
performer.
And she's a singer.
So what is it about the is there some extra layer to the mimicry or the singing along with, or
mm-hmm.
is it a kind of
mm-hmm.
is there a kind of homage, or I don't know, how is
yeah.
it that you think of the mimicry side of it, the,
mm-hmm. that's something that I think with the creatures, the non-human voices, as I think of them, in Cricket Tree Crow, I was just trying to see how I could get out of a human perspective somehow through listening and through sound making.
Mm-hmm.
So by singing with them, you know, could I shift my perspective a little bit? And in the same way, in terms of shifting myself through singing, the first voice in this, the Ferlacco voice series that I worked with, was Edith Piaf. And her voice was just so amazing. I wanted to like learn, when my voice is just like so soft and pedestrian, and hers is like so sharp and intense, and just like has so much of all emotions in it. And so, yeah, I thought, well, maybe I can, you know, like if I slow it down, you know, and I just follow every curve of her voice with my voice. So then I had this idea of teaching myself to sing through singing with different great voices.
Right. I see. So,
so again, just trying to grow as a person,
right,
through singing with
other beings,
people or
other
beings.
People.
Or, yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. So in terms of your, I guess the cricket, the tree, and the crow. I mean, is there a particular sonic world that drew you to them, as opposed to an owl or
yeah.
a bluebird
mm-hmm.
or a,
mm-hmm.
or a
well,
fish?
when I made that piece, I was in Montreal, so I wanted to work with critters that you would find, things you would find in Montreal that I could
mm-hmm.
have encounters with, and listen to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there was a range of those that I sort of researched, and I actually learned about them. I learned about the species, and I listened a lot to field recordings of them. And so it was all about just whatever spoke to me the most.
And well, how do you conceptualize the sound of a tree, if I may ask?
Right. Well, that I was influenced a little bit by Peter Ablinger, who's a composer who made a series of recordings. He's very into white noise as a
mm-hmm.
concept
mm-hmm.
and material. And so he painstakingly recorded the sound of wind through different species of trees,
mm-hmm.
branches,
mm-hmm.
which is difficult to do because the wind just wants to make its own noise on the mic. So he had to carefully get the sound of the wind coming through the trees without getting the sound of the
mm-hmm.
of the wind on the microphone. And so what I did was I found a recording of like wind through the leaves and the branches of a maple tree, which is very white noisy. And then I separated the white noise into different sort of frequency bands, and then sang along with each band.
see.
So that's how I ended up approaching.
Wonderful, yeah. So that's the real sonic property of the tree.
Yeah, thinking of that as its sound signature is the way that it plays the wind.
Right, right. But it sounds like in Peter Eblinger's case, was it contact mics, or was it more of a resonating tree,
it was the wind going through the trees, and it was recorded I don't know exactly what kind of microphone, but with kind of a normal, but shielded, from the wind, but getting the tone, because if you listen to the wind through different trees, there's almost like slightly different tones, and so he has a series, and you can hear each different quality of the white noise.
Great. No, I wasn't aware of that body of that work.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, so the other thing, another thing I want to ask you about is, I know you've trained in deep listening.
Yes.
I think all the way to the full certification. So how is that? I mean, what drew you to that? And I guess maybe it's obvious, but maybe not. What role is that playing in your sonic musical practice?
Mm-hmm. Well, what drew me to it, I found out about the deep listening retreats when I was still living in Canada, and I love the combination of what you would explore in a deep listening retreat, which is not just listening. So I love that it was created by this amazing composer, but that also you would be focusing on listening on a profound level, but then also on movement, which I have a bit of a background in, and on dreams. So the fact that these three things would be combined in one kind of experience just seemed really amazing to me. So I just went. I just went on the retreat as like a thing to do, and then again, I guess I got hooked.
All right. When and where was that?
I think the first one would have been the summer. I would have done one the summer of 2005 and one the summer of 2006. That was when they were in New Mexico. In New Mexico, in the mountains.
In Rose Mountain.
Yes.
I did one
there.
What did you do there? In 1991 or two. Yeah, we're just speaking of Pauline Oliveros, who is the inventor and teacher of deep listening. How would you describe it? I mean, now that you're a full representative
of
the,
able to do it.
Practice.
It's a philosophy and practice of sonic awareness. Mm-hmm. That's like one kind of
sonic awareness, including and what I remember. What among the things I remember that stuck with me about that experience was the listening. In addition to listening outside, listening to your inner voices or inner self, which is a big part of that. So that's a whole nother.
And listening 24 hours a day, listening in your dreams.
Mm-hmm. So it's expanded.
Yeah.
So that's obviously played a role in your work in some way.
Absolutely. It's kind of all about listening.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
What's in the future or in the works for you? What kind of works or projects? I mean, I know that you're focused on other things.
So much so that I'm actually looking to keep working in the genre of the cricket tree crow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in seeing how I can vocally embody or create scapes based on sounds of like ocean sounds, things that are a bit more elemental, as opposed to specific creatures, maybe also other creatures. And I have a whole list of things, but they're kind of,
They're on hold.
A little bit on hold.
They're in the works.
You take 6 months gestation. Off and then jump back in. Yeah.
Well, great. And I asked one of just briefly about performing. So what is, we're obviously, you're going to do a little bit of each, but I gather that's kind of representative of how you work. I mean, mm-hmm. some of your work is just for presentation mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. installation or, mm-hmm. or otherwise. And have you always performed, or is that kind of a newer outgrowth, or from film
yeah.
to sound to performance?
Yeah, I would say that's how it went. And I don't perform as much. I do more sort of tape pieces, more like installation or
right.
Things like that. But the root of all of the material for the works is performance. I mean, I am in a kind of performative space alone with the sounds, you
right.
know, and so it makes sense to perform them live as well to me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So, well, great. Well, that's a great start to the evening. And so we're gonna, so just to recap the chronology, the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna hear. We're gonna hear first the quad piece.
We're gonna hear the quad piece first. We're gonna hear Cricket Tree Crow
right.
first.
Cricket Tree Crow.
And then I'll perform the two pieces from
okay.
Rock of
so
Place
so we're
series.
Pretty much ready to just push play on that, right?
Yeah.
So we'll do that. We're gonna change the lighting a little bit, and then we'll have the first piece. It's like 20-30 minutes.
No, it's more like 20 minutes. Yeah.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we'll just. Reset, you
yes.
know, and get mic check, and then
yes.
so. But we'll just continue. No, no,
yeah.
proper intermission or anything. Mm-hmm. And help yourself to refreshments. There is a bathroom if you need in the back. If you just go down the steps and then up the steps and to the left of the refrigerator, and I guess that's it. And great. So
thank you
wonderful.
Again.
My
thank
pleasure.
You so
thank you.
Thank you everyone for coming.
So we will be changing the lighting and we'll get right into it.
Okay.